Blog Talk Radio.
Day of summer, although you wouldn't know it if you're living back east or in places like Oklahoma, where it appears some people think this is the wrath of God for all the misbehaving and embracing of controversial agendas that deal with morality. Anyway, among the events today, in 1567, the Jews were expelled from Brazil. Brazil is an interesting country. It was formed as by the Portuguese. There was a line of demarcation that the Vatican, the Pope, crossed the line over the globe. Brazil is the largest country in South America. The rest is Spanish, or was, and then, of course, British in Bermuda and places like that. Anyway, it's very interesting how the Jews, the Moriscos, were treated by both the Portuguese and the Spanish, and it was the worst Inquisition was the Spanish, was the Portuguese, excuse me, Inquisition. Defeated at Waterloo, the Spanish king came back to Carlos, I think, and they revived the Inquisition, reinstituted it. Another horrible thing happened in 1756, dealing with India. Was known as the Black Hole of Calcutta, where the British East Indian Company had their own mercenary military force, and of course the Indians of the subcontinent objected to what they saw was the exploitation of India, and so Kipling wrote about the British considered India the jewel in their crown, and of course in 1756 they forced all of the remaining survivors of the battle into a cellar in Calcutta, and where survivors were suffocated and came down with dysentery, things like that. Many died until there was a relief force from the British Army. In 1782, the Congress decided that the Great Seal of the United States would have an eagle. 1789, the French were trying to get democracy. They looked at America, the United States, and there was these politicians and people who were interested in promoting democracy to get away from the aristocracy of the French Bourbons. Those were the kings. They had what is called the Oath of the Tennis Court, And I think it was Daudet, the great French painter, who painted this, made a depiction of that. They didn't have photography or videos in those days. 1793, Eli Whitney invented the cotton gin, which when that was invented and manufactured, that was the beginning of the end of slavery in the South, because it was more efficient and slavery was a dying institution. Anyway, in 1837, King William IV of Victoria succeeded her uncle, William IV, who died. He had no male, he had no children, so, and she was the longest reigning British monarch. Died in January 22nd, 1901. In 1863, West Virginia became the 35th state. Now, West Virginia was actually part of Virginia, but because Virginia had, was the mother of the Confederacy, or so they thought, Lincoln decided to encourage part of Virginia, which didn't support slavery or the Confederacy. They split it off and was tried here in California to set up, to split off part of Northern California to have its own separate state. But this happened in 1863, and he got away with it. In 1867, Andrew Johnson succeeded Lincoln. Andrew Johnson's big success was the purchase of Alaska for $10 million. It's also would be interesting, you know, to plate, if the Russians had come down from Fort Ross into San Francisco and even into Los Angeles and Southern California, what would the state be today? In 1944, the Central Intelligence Agency was set up by Congress. intelligence was before the Central Intelligence Agency. Military intelligence and intelligence and spying was done by the Navy, because the Navy was going to these ports and they had, in effect, military attachés stationed abroad, and they picked up information. Among the birthdays today, Jacques Offenbach, who is best known for the Tales of Hoffmann opera, and also Gaieté Parisienne, which was a ballet depicting the fancy nightlife of Paris and the beautiful women. The woman, the American soprano who succeeded Kirsten Flagstad, who was the greatest Wagnerian of her soprano of her time. She was from Norway. She made her debut in the mid-30s at the Metropolitan Opera, and nobody could touch her, and still can't to this day. Anyway, she was Norwegian, and the Nazis had invaded Norway, and with the help of Vidkun Quisling. Flagstaff's husband was a Norwegian, and he stayed in Norway. So Pearson decided that she should be with her husband, even though the country was occupied by the Nazi oppressors. So she went back to Norway. And, of course, a lot of people never forgave her for doing that. She died at a young age, in her early 60s, died of cancer. But so the Metropolitan Opera needed a soprano, a Wagnerian soprano, to replace Flagstaff, who never sang at the Met again. And they found this woman from St. Louis, Helen Trobel, who was a German ancestry. And, of course, the director of the Met didn't like his opera singers to be singing pop stuff and making movies and that sort of thing. So she got fired. Famous author, she was part of the 50 writers and movie producers who were involved, who were brought before Congress, the House on American Activities Committee, because of alleged communist links and sympathies and crimes. Lillian Hellman, and she was quite a writer. A lot of controversy about her. One of the great swashbucklers of all time in movies, especially during the 30s, Charge of the Light Brigade, Errol Flynn, Captain Blood. Errol Flynn was born on this day. He was born in New Zealand. And he loved and drank and had a great time. He died young also. Another person who died young and later became a movie star, a controversial French politician. His daughter is now running the right-wing political party in France, but her father was named Jean Le Pen, and he stepped aside to let his daughter, who was quite a good politician in her own right, a lot of people don't agree with her. You remember Martin Landau and the TV series, some of the other films he made for today. And, of course, those of us who remember the Beach Boys, Brian Wilson was born in 1942. One of the great pianists, classical pianists. Interesting, his father was an American black GI who married or had an affair with a Hungarian woman and dumped her and her child, Andre. The mother was a piano teacher, and her son succeeded to becoming one of the world's greatest pianists, Andre Watts. He's half black and Hungarian. Among the deaths today, of course, in 1837, was the death of William IV, one of the Hanoverian kings of England. And, of course, one of the great controversial, not great, but controversial Jewish ethnic gangsters, Bugsy Siegel, was murdered. In fact, his gangster Ma was brought before Congress, and I think I have a little clip from her. Let me see. Keep off her committee. Yeah, let me play that. She's kind of funny when she was accused of having a relationship excuse me, with the mob. And it's this typical woman, Ma, who comes across as very naive, but probably was very very sophisticated, knew what was going on, but knew how to keep her mouth shut and keep her head on. Let's see if we have that Keith Hoffer committee. I think we do, H-I-J. K-L, where is that woman? No, that's Keith. And also we have, we're going to replay the interview that I did with Rick Hansen, the Canadian, who when he was 15 years old, was in a car accident and became, was paralyzed from the waist down. He later was one of the big promoters of paralyzed guys, of paralyzed people, encouraged them not to just sit around and mope, but to participate in wheelchair in a wheelchair marathoner. We don't have that, so I'm just going to go ahead and play Rick Hansen's, what did I do with Rick? Here we go. The interview I did with him, graduate of the Canadian Consulate here in San Francisco.
Cap, today I have an unusual, distinguished guest who is doing something that most people talk about doing with 2 feet, but don't do. But this gentleman is doing it in a wheelchair. His name is Rick Hansen from British Columbia in Canada. Rick, where are you from?
I'm from Williams Lake, British Columbia.
Whereabouts is that?
It's about 365 miles north of Vancouver.
Oh, okay. Well, most Americans think of Vancouver, and that's all they see of British Columbia. You're going to see a lot of the world. Rick, why are you taking this trip in a wheelchair?
Well, there's two reasons, really. One is to help other people who have had spinal injuries to increase the quality of life, right from the medical treatment for research to the rehabilitation, and, of course, getting back into the mainstream of life again. So we're trying to raise funds and awareness for spinal cord research, rehabilitation, and sport. But also the challenge, the spirit. Canada and the United States are made up of 34 countries, and one of our most unique qualities of our forefathers was they came over here with vision and dreams of a better life, and they had the courage and conviction to pursue that with 100%. And so now we're going back with a dream to our forefathers' countries, where we're uniting all of us to work together and making a dream become a reality.
Specifically, what countries are you going to, Rick?
Well, there'll be 34 in all, countries such as Russia, China, the United States.
You got clearance from the Russians already?
Yes, we do. We're really excited about that. And to see countries such as China, Russia, the United States, and Canada working together in a world that seems to be so divided sometimes is really exciting and positive.
Rick, what kind of recreational hobbies do you have?
Well, aside from athletics, I do a lot of camping, fishing. I like to do a lot of outdoor leisure, listen to music. It's just, to me, I like to do as much as I can in new areas as well, arts and literatures. But it's just a matter of having the time. My life has been so focused to date, I'll have to wait until a later date to be able to expand myself even more.
Rick, what would you say to the person who's been active, even a young teenager or whatever, who has a spinal injury that makes them disabled, and they have, you know, they're active with animals and they're active in recreation and that. Is life finished for them?
I'd have to say no. Life is finished when you decide to finish it, or when someone higher up decides that it's finished for you. If you're still here existing, it's so precious, and we are here only once. I feel it to look back at what may never be again, or what can never be, is very foolish, because there are so many things ahead that you can do, and to focus on those. Life is so short, you'll never be able to finish all of them. It's so exciting and fulfilled. It's a matter of having the courage to go forward, take that first step, the second, and the third, and of course having the support around you to be able to do those things.
So Rick, what do? Do you fish or...
I love fishing. I mean, that's actually how I had my accident, was coming home from a fishing trip.
You still do that even though you, after the accident?
No doubt about it. It's an opportunity for me to get out, really it's just being able to regain touch with myself and my close friends and family.
Still land the big ones?
Hey, you bet. I tell you, I was out with my cousin Lee the other day, and we got a 50-pound spring, and he's... Lee is on the tour with us, and he's a great fisherman, and he's a great guide. So
your practical advice and philosophy, your prescription for people who have had disabilities, is that they shouldn't give up. They should have the spirit and the vision to maybe not do what you're going to do around the world in more than 80 days, but to keep on living.
That's right, and it's not only a person who's had a visual disability. We all have our disabilities in our own way. We all have our own setbacks in life. And I think that the message here is that regardless of what happens, if you lose your job tomorrow, if your wife leaves you, if your family, someone in your family dies, those are all setbacks in life, and it's dealing with them, accepting them, and moving on, continuing. Those are important things because, as I say, life is very, very precious.
Rick, you're going to go to Australia, and having been there, I just got to tell you, look out for the kangaroos.
That's right. I've heard a few of them around. We've got some guards that'll be able to protect us from those jumping creatures.
Rick, all the best, and thanks for being on the program.
Great, thank you.
This is Peter Paul at the Canadian Consulate with Rick Hansen, who's on his way on a 25,000-mile-plus trip around the world. All the best, Rick. God bless. This is Peter Paul. Thanks for listening.
Now, that was done at the Canadian Consulate several years ago. So we have a lot of interviews, close to 2,000 we've done in our career. And when we will do more, and added to that is our video at Amicus Veritas, AMICUSVERITAS, YouTube. You should be looking at this, controversial lawyer. I went to the University of Alabama Law School, and the law school dean is quoted as calling this guy a fraud and a con man. His name is Morris Dees, controversial Southern lawyer who's accused of peddling paranoia and profiting from the Nazi Ku Klux Klan danger while patronizing black pain. Him and a guy named Joseph Levine started this Southern Poverty Law Center, which has become the nation's wealthiest so-called civil organization, if you can call it that. And Dees is accused of being a hustler. In fact, I think he's defined himself as a hustler. He learned it while sitting in the Baptist church, so supposedly that's part of his biography. Anyway, he started in the mail order business with another guy who later broke up with him, and was a very bitter separation. But anyway, what Dees has been doing is sending out all these form letters, especially targeting Jews, people of Jewish heritage, some, and probably many, who either have a connection to the Holocaust or who survived the Holocaust, and he's stroking their fears that Hitler is going to, or Hitlerites will be roaming the streets of America, peddling Mein Kampf, the Ku Klux Klan, which was very bad after the American Civil War and up into the 20s. In fact, the northernmost point that the Ku Klux Klan operated out of was in northern Michigan and in Indiana. And at one time during the 20s, there were thousands of them who openly marched in the streets and took a warrant covering their faces. There were several movies, like The Black Legion, starring, I think, Humphrey Bogart, which alerted Americans about the dangers of the Klan. But the Klan is in effect been emasculated, and people don't take, even white Southerners today, white youth, people who grew up after 1963, and even people who were World War II babies, don't take demands personally. It's not a serious threat. But this guy somehow has managed to peddle paranoia and profit from it, him and his organization. What we discovered was a couple of things that we're trying to verify. This court case, this divorce, where he is accused of being a sexual predator, sexual pervert. This is what the claim is. And it's supposed to have happened that there was supposed to be a legal filing, a brief, in a civil court in Alabama, and we'll get the sites. I'm still tracking it down. It's just so incredible that he was promoting, wanted to have homosexual experiences or a gay experience. If this is false, if this is untrue, then whoever put this out, and several people who put this out on the web, then why hasn't Dees sued them if it's not true? So this is what another thing, truth should prevail when somebody is maliciously maligned or libeled. And if this is untrue, then it's certainly libel since it is in print. But it looks like it's true, and we have yet to hear Mr. Dees respond to these charges from other people. Also, this is not false. The Southern Poverty Law Center was connected to a guy named Pickover, who was one of Bernie Madoff's financial connections. And Pickover died mysteriously in his swimming pool, but Bernie Madoff is in a federal prison. The sad thing about Madoff's family, he has a surviving son who is dying of cancer, and the son has not forgiven his father for Bernie Madoff bilking millions of dollars, billions of dollars, some people think, from unwary investors and people, who gave him their life savings so that they would have money to live comfortably on to the end of their lives. And a lot of this money has not been recovered. Why is this connection? Why is Pickover and Morris Dees connected? So this is another controversial issue. Also, there's an allegation that this woman, Heidi Beinruch, has been using Facebook, looking up people, her critics, or Southern Poverty Law Center's critics, on Facebook or some of the other social networks, and then harassing these people. There may be a federal violation right there, terrorism. So, it's a very controversial organization. Also, it started with a legitimate interest where the remains of the Ku Klux Klan had been involved in the bombing and the killing of some blacks. This is back in 1971, which is, 43 years ago. And Dees, apparently, who calls himself a hustler, apparently admired and adopted some of the methods of Mr. Plunkett, who was the Tammany Hall chieftain who made this infamous statement, "I saw my opportunities and I took them." Well, this is apparently what Morris Dees has done. And several both left and right and conservative media publications and critics from The Nation, which is liberal, Harper's Magazine, like centrist, to local papers in Alabama have been critical of Dees's financial or lack of financial accountability and not doing what they claim they're supposed to be doing, helping poor people who can't afford lawyers. So there's this issue, and the people need to be made aware of it. Now, the most recent controversy, which brought us into it as conservative Roman Catholics, is that the San Francisco Chronicle's, one of their sports writers, a guy named C.W. Nebius, has been castigating Archbishop Cordignone because he has been critical of, quote, gay lesbian marriage in NAMBLA and a lot of the other issues, political issues, of gay lesbian NAMBLA propagandists. But as the Archbishop and is appointed by the Pope and represents, there are over 200,000 Catholics in this city and in this diocese, that he has an obligation to uphold his priestly oath to stand up for Catholic values and traditions. And he's not saying that gay, lesbian people who get married should be burned at the stake or their marriage certificates trashed and torn up and they'd be castigated. The precept in the Catholic Church is you hate the sin, but you love the sinner. And then, of course, the Pope has his statements on gays have sorted to by his columnists who implied that the Pope approves of gay marriage. The Pope can't approve of that because it goes counter to Catholic teachings, theologies, and principles and commandments. This is another one of the, how they manipulate the thing. Also, these people either ignore history or they are ignorant of it. The gay marriage goes back to the Roman Empire, and even before that, when Nero, one of the Roman emperors, married one of his boyfriends, and then there was another Roman emperor. He wasn't Italian or Roman, but he was an import, Elagabius, who used to run around Rome at night dressed in drag, and also married his boyfriend, who was eventually assassinated, I think, by the Praetorian Guard. He was forced to commit suicide, and of course, some of the horrible things he did. Among them was he decided that he was going to redevelop Rome. He was the first person to use arson as a tool of redevelopment, and he blamed the Christians, and he used to persecute the Christians, or what are known as Catholics today. So these are some of the issues. So we will be back Monday. We're lining up an interview with the great author, Jack Cashel, who's written many books, and one of his best, he's written an expose on Obama, and one of his best was First Strike, which was about questioning about TWA Flight 800, which a lot of people believe, and we did a thing with a military explosive expert, that plane was shot down by a missile. We don't know whose missile. And there's a lot of other mysteries about the TWA 800 flight and the fact that there were kids from who graduated from Pleasanton High School were on their way to Paris, and their lives were cut short. Anyway, Jack Cashel has written several things. One of my favorites is the book that he did on popes and bankers, which a lot of people, and even I didn't know, that the Pope at that time financed Gutenberg and wanted some Bibles made. And this is the guy who invented the Gutenberg press, which ironically, the monks at that time had the monopoly on communications, printing. So the monks no longer had that monopoly because the printing press was available and was easy and cheap to manufacture one and to disseminate printed information. And Cashel, I don't know what he's currently working on, and he speaks a few languages. Interesting guy, and he did do a book, What's the Matter, California, which he dealt with part of the U.S. Navy sailor Stephen Nery's case, which the material got from us, and some of the material, because there's still a lot that's not been reviewed. Anyway, we're doing our usual. We'll be back Monday at 3:30. Go to our YouTube site at AMICUSVERITAS, and we'll end with politics and poker. And we'll have more on these what I call smorgasbord Catholic trash, try to trash the Archbishop of San Francisco, who's just doing his job. So here we go.
What do you say, Ben? Want a hand?
No, you guys go ahead. I got too much on my mind to play poker.
King bets.
Cost you five. Tony, up to you.
Hey, Tony, what are you
going to
do?
I'm in.
So am I.
Fine.
Me too.
Gentlemen, here we are, and one thing is clear. We gotta pick a candidate for Congress this year.
Big ace.
Ace bets.
You'll pay through the nose.
Okay, where do you stand?
I'm in.
So am I.
Likewise.
Here goes.
Possible straight, possible flush.
Gentlemen, how about some names we can use? Some qualified Republican who's willing to lose.
How's about we should make Jack Riley the guy?
Which Riley are you thinking of, Jack B or Jack Y?
I say neither one. I never even met him.
I say when you got a pair of Jacks, better.
Politics or poker, which is more important?
Paratrays.
Better.
Little trays, good as gold.
I'll say. Raise your fine.
I'll call.
I'll hold.
I'll raise your back.
I think you're bluffing.
Put your money where your mouth is.
Say, I'm in.
Gentlemen, knock it off and let's get this done.
Hi, Michael Panyashinkovich, I'm certain he'd run.
Mike is out, I'm afraid he just wouldn't sell. Nobody likes a candidate whose name they can't spell.
How about Dave Zimmerman?
Davey's too bright.
What about Walt Gustafson?
Walt died last night.
How about Frank Monahan?
What about George Gale?
Frank ain't a citizen, and George is in jail.
We could run Al Wallenstein.
He's only 23.
What about Ed Peterson?